All right. Hello out there in internet lands, because there is no other land other than the internet land. It's Dan Q. Hopefully everyone can hear me. More than just myself, fortunately, as much as you'd like to hear me talk all the time. I also am joined by my three regular co-hosts, fellow regular co-hosts, as we launch Season 5 of Polycast, the Civilization Strategy Podcast here. First off, by seniority after myself, is Makalua.
Still getting caffeinated, okay, thanks.
Also joined by the Mean Team.
Greetings, listeners. The Mean Team here. Got a live one.
Q&L, Lisa.
Achoo!
Beautiful.
Aww.
She's going for extra cute today.
Aww, cute. Start out the year with a bang, huh?
All right, so for those of you who did not listen to episode 100 live, or have not heard episode 100, that was our first attempt at a live broadcast, but it was very different. It was a celebratory episode. We really didn't have any set topics, but we do have topics today. So what we're going to be doing now is we're going to be starting with our first news item, and that is with regards to the lead designer of Civilization V stepping down, leaving Firaxis, I should say, as we found out in late December, and then joining Stardock, as we found out earlier this year. So John Schaefer was lead designer on Civilization V, also involved in Civilization IV, co-lead designer on the Beyond the Sword expansion pack. Was with the company for 6 years, started in the Civ community. You may know him by his forum handle, tough words, as Trip in the Appleton modding community, and is now at Stardock Systems, joined by Kale, Derek Paxton, known for the very popular Fall from Heaven mod for Civilization IV. And the story about John leaving was brokered by Troy Goodfellow, who was a past guest co-host on the show, and has reported that they departed on good terms, John and Firaxis. And John has been an admirer of Stardock's games for some time as a fan. And according to Big Download, he told them that he wanted to work with a company that had the freedom to make the kind of games that he wants to make. And
oh man,
there was a post that John did in the Elemental forums to kind of introduce himself with a little bit of humor. And I'm going to give credit to Nikolai on We Play Civ and Mainbrain on Appleton for posting this. You know, I can't talk about too many details of what our plans are right now, but a little tease can't hurt. Right now I'm thinking we'll trim the interface down to one big button in the middle of the screen. The text on this button will say, win the game. We'll do some focus testing and see how things go. So, but we know that the game, Civilization V, I should say, is still being developed, because I guess we had a patch in December or something.
Something like that.
Yeah, they made some significant changes. I don't know. We may be discussing that too. And a little hot fix afterwards. So I think it's fair to say that we wish John the best, and not to be a stranger in the Civ community. There certainly is a lot of discussion in the community about whether this is a good thing or a bad thing, and some attacks on John personally. And I think it's fair to say that if you want to criticize the game, criticize the game constructively. Watch when you start getting into a little bit of personal attacks, because in going through some of this discussion, I was trying to understand what people were saying, and as soon as the personal attacks start, you lose me. So, again, thank you, John, and again, wish you the best on Stardock, and I'm sure we'll be hearing more from you and Kale as things develop, but Civilization V is continuing, and I'm certain we haven't seen the last patch for the game either.
Yeah, I don't know, I was taking a look at some of the posts on the virtual post when he left Firaxis, and I was really surprised at how many people were saying that, oh, he, you know, we're glad that he left Firaxis because we don't like Civ 5, when in fact, you know, he might not actually have anything to do with some of the problems that Civ 5 has, or maybe he does, but I mean, I just don't think that it's a good reason to wish somebody ill. I don't know, this other news about him joining Stardock, I mean, since I'm more of a layperson when it comes to games, I haven't actually played any of Stardock's games, but looking at the games that they've produced, it seems like it's kind of right up his alley, just thinking about how he made the Fall from Heaven mod, and I think he made Fall from Heaven too, right? I mean, it makes
yes.
sense. So, like Jan said, I guess I wish him the best of luck. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of rumors going around about, you know, whether it was really amicable and whether we need to read between the lines with regard to his departure. Pretty, I think it's just as they say, you know, like, I think it was amicable. I mean, not that they would actually make it public if it weren't, but I don't really see any reason why he would leave now. I mean, if it really were because Civ 5 was so bad, shouldn't they have realized that before it was released? But hey, maybe that's what everybody's saying.
Yeah, it bothers me to see him go, just because, you know, I know a lot of people don't like some of the directions Civ 5 chose to go. I am certainly among that population. I mean, Civ 5 has its good points and there's plenty of things that just aren't done yet. But anytime you're losing a person, you're losing another human resource when it comes to the development of the game. You know, and it's hard to pinpoint, you know, were the flaws in Civ 5 John Schaefer's fault, or were they somebody else's fault? I mean, only the people who really knew the project, the project management setup, can really answer that. And unfortunately, that's not something they're going to release or that any of us are privy to. But certainly, I wish him the best, and I'd like to see what he can do now that he's with a different company. Maybe that on its own will tell us a little bit. So we'll see.
I mean, just like Kale was, you know, in charge of Fall from Heaven, and John was in charge of Civilization V. Both the things that you can highlight as good things and bad things about both games, they're more than a figurehead, of course. They were involved, but I think a lot of it is focused on, you know, Civilization V equals John, or specifically, you know, even the Fall from Heaven mod equals Kale, or even Elemental equals Brad, and they're certainly a part of it, but there is a substantial team behind that. And now Kale has become lead designer on Elemental. The Stardock CEO, Brad Wardell, stepped down to serve as the game's executive producer and continues to work on the game's AI. It hasn't been said what Schaefer is going to be doing as far as the continued development of Elemental, but apparently there's also another title after Elemental that Stardock's going to be working on that Schaefer seems to have taken the big seat over. So, you know, I guess we'll just have to wait and see. For people who may not be familiar with Stardock, I know you mentioned not kind of in a sense there, Lisa, there was Galactic Civilizations and then Galactic Civilizations 2, a couple of expansion packs for each that kind of became the new Civ in Space, kind of a lot of people view it as kind of the spiritual or practical successor to the Master of Orion series, or even Alpha Centauri, since that license is still owned by Electronic Arts. We haven't seen a sequel to that. So time will tell, and it certainly seems to be that Stardock is paying very close attention to the Civ community. I mean, first you've got Kale, and now you've got Trip. And I guess also Stardock hired a science fiction and fantasy author by the name of Dave Stern to quote-unquote oversee heavy lore implementation into all Stardock game projects. I guess he worked on some lore book for the Elemental title, which was included in the game's special edition. So they're going for some big names here as far as to give them some help. So, but I'm sure in the Civ community, we haven't heard the last of John and Kale.
If Elemental suddenly ends up with a bunch of Fall from Heaven elements, I don't think I'd mind.
So I'm guessing that Mackie is the only one that's played a game from Stardock, or?
No, I've played Gal Civ 2, and I know Dan has too.
I have, yes.
Oh. I've seen stuff of Elemental, and it's in the same vein as Master of Magic, which I liked. So then Fall from Heaven was also kind of that, except as a Civ mod, so it'll be interesting.
I'm sorry, I got confused when you started to speak nerd.
you're on this show, really?
You're surprised to hear nerd around here? Wait a minute.
That's impossible.
No, I prefer the term geek, but, you know, we could have a major tangent on that. But in any event, we're not dorks. That's maybe it's the only thing we can agree on. If we
yeah, we're nerds. Cooler than dorks.
Yeah, I'll pass on that too. I don't want that title.
These two things, you know, combined here about you know, John leaving Firaxis and joining Stardock, and even Kale as well. Just checking some of the chat here. There doesn't seem to be anything specific on it. So we're going to go on to the next news item, but I did forget to do something with regards to the news. And I don't know how the volume is on that, but that is our news theme.
Mongols are awesome. That's all I have to say.
So we now transition to Civilization Network.
Yeah, I found out about this like a couple days ago. We're trying to get a team going. We'll see how that works.
Yeah, so it's been renamed.
As long as, you know, Phil gets to be the me in team, I mean, it's okay. Okay, but anyway, let's keep going. That was a bad one.
So, Civilization Network has been renamed Civilization World in an update posted by Sid Meier himself over on Facebook. Why the name change? To, quote, better reflect the main theme of the game. In Civworld, you'll be joining your friends to form nations, which will compete with other player nations to rule the world, unquote. And as we know, Civworld, formerly Civ Network, is going to be based on Facebook, the social networking website with more than half a billion users. And wasn't its founder just named Time Person of the Year or something like that? Showing my North American bias. I guess the really big announcement beyond the name change was more practical, is that a closed alpha is going to start on January 10th, so just in 4 days from this recording. You know, if you start looking at the history, if you're on the Facebook page for Civ World, you start looking at the announcements, there's definitely been some things that have been going on behind the scenes, because we were expecting a beta test more than a year ago. But now we actually have a set date and people can sign up to be a team. Polton, Civ Fanatics, and We Play Civ and Civ players are already discussing about joining our team to beat the other Civ sites, all in good-natured fun.
Team Troll will dominate, just so you know.
I don't know, Team Rickroll might be looking for a company.
Got nothing. Nothing. That's obsoleted.
And by nothing, you mean everything, of course. So you can enter your team of 5 to 50 people. You may not be part of the first round, but I guess there's going to be successive rounds. Teams will receive their confirmations beginning the 10th of January. What was interesting, even more than that, was they talked a little bit about the design. We've been promised some updates this year. But Civworld games will have a well-defined beginning and end, each ending with a triumphant civilization and one person recognized as the game's most prestigious player.
Woo-hoo. I mean, speaking of that, you know, Mark Zuckerberg being named Times Person of the Year, I mean, aren't they a little bit late on the uptick on that? Like, what else are they going to, like, put on the cover next? Like, you're like, oh yeah, this internet thing, it'll be really big in a few years. Like, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I feel like they should have done this a couple of years ago. But,
well, I think it's a bit of a downer because a few years ago, you know, everybody was Times Person of the Year when they had the reflective mirror thing. So,
yeah.
After I'm named Times Person of the Year, then everybody else afterwards, I mean, who really cares? We peek.
It's all about competition and politics for that sort of thing, anyway.
So after Dan runs for Prime Minister of Canada.
I thought they were a monarchy. They revolted.
Oh, gosh. Well, technically it's a constitutional monarchy, but, you know, this is not a politics podcast.
You need more military in your cities. That's the problem right there. I mean, you're running monarchy and you have no military, essentially. It just makes no sense.
I can't think of anything to say that will sound intelligent. Ish. So
okay, I'm not saying anything intelligent, so it's a wash.
I win. Oh, sorry, you were going to say something, Lisa?
I was going to say that I don't know, I think I kind of like this change to the game. I mean, I don't really know what it was before, but from I guess little indications, I just had the idea that, you know, oh, we're going to individually play Civs. But I don't know, I like this new idea of having a team name and a team captain. Of course, you always run the risk of somebody, you know, dropping out of the game, and then I don't know what's going to happen. You know, if somebody on your team leaves, then are you just kind of screwed? And I don't really know how people are going to play together. That's what I'm a little bit confused about. But, yeah, but I'm excited about this, especially having a, you know, well-defined ending. That is something I'm missing quite a lot.
I'm very curious, too. Like, this could go any way, any direction. If the game is designed well, and it implements the teamwork aspect of it, and still somewhat resembles Civ at the end of the day, it could be a very fun experience, or it could just turn into another one of those Facebook games that nobody touches. I'm very curious what they do with it. They have a lot of big names on it, so I don't know. I'm hoping for the best here, but we'll see. We'll see.
I'm sure that they'll get a certain number of people playing it no matter what, just, you know, because of the name. But I do like the idea of teams. It seems more, I guess, congruent with like what Facebook can actually do instead of, you know, just being a Facebook version of the iPhone version of Civ Rev. You know, it's just, it's something different. And I don't know, I wouldn't be surprised if Civ is behind that. Well, I mean, of course he's behind this whole thing, but like, I'm saying this change. Or maybe he's not because he's kind of old. Oh.
Oh, that's a throwdown there, Lisa. Whoa. Well, I think Sid is leading this project like he led Civilization Revolution. So, you know, we know this is not like a Civ Rev port over to Facebook, fortunately. And that's not a diss at all of Civ Rev. I enjoy Civ Rev. I mean, for me, like I mentioned on the show before, that, hey, Civ Rev, it's portable Civ. I'm not a Facebook user. I've said this before, I don't dislike Facebook itself, I dislike a lot of what Facebook is being used, as well as the Facebook company itself, but that's an extreme tangent, but I'm kind of like on a wait and see. I'm not going to commit to say that I absolutely will try Civ World, but I'm intrigued enough by this update, especially where, you know, there's a defined beginning and end, talk about progressing through the different areas of the game, you'll have a chance to win era victories as well. Kind of like in Civilization Revolution, where you get to a new era and your civilization gets a particular bonus. You know, it talks about how, you know, you're playing as a team, so your team is your civilization, whether you've given yourself a quote-unquote proper Civ name, like, you know, the Arabians or the Americans or the Chinese, or whether you can actually say, you know, we are Team Apolt and Team Civ Fanatics, Team We Play Civ, Team Polycast is the best show ever, you know, whatever the team name happens to be.
What, Dan, you don't want to say our team name?
There are several ways that I could go with that, and you're trying to derail my train of thought.
That wasn't my specific objective, but it does tend to happen.
You know, Sid says we want players to have a final goal to work towards, as well as short-term objectives to achieve as they play. Okay, quote-unquote, okay, we know that the final goal to work towards is to absolutely crush your enemies, okay? That's just understood. Mm-hmm. Let's just get that out there right now. trophies you unlock with your triumphs will carry over from game to game, and you can show them off in your throne room. And of course, I'm instantly thinking about Civilization 2's throne room. And yes, there is throne room in Civilization Revolution as well, but I played the DS version and I didn't get the throne room benefit. So, I don't know. I'm looking forward to more developer updates, and also since it's going to be, now it says it's a closed alpha test version, so I expect that you get in on the alpha test, you're going to be restricted by what you can say publicly, what can be shown publicly, what can be discussed publicly, but hey, you know, you got a chance to get in, you know, on the ground. If this is really what you're interested in, you're a Civ fan, you're a Facebook fan, you know, even if you're thinking, oh, Civ World, because it's Facebook-based, is not for me, like I'm thinking right now, we are expanding the reach of Civ, and that can only be a good thing.
Dale mentioned from We Play Civ with, that he was wondering whether Firaxis or 2K, or even Sid, well, he addressed this post directly to Sid, so I guess it's just him personally that's going to be taking money out of our pockets. But it says, Sid, I'd like to know how you propose to gouge players with microtransactions. $1.99 to unlock the tech, 99 cents to build a couple of units, which, it's a fair point. I mean, there's a lot of other there's a lot of other games that require a little Facebook money, or I think it's like Facebook credits that I've actually seen on Safeway the other day, which is really weird to me. But I don't know. I just hope that it's not going to be, you know, it's not going to be like Civ 5 with, you know, like downloadable content or not necessarily downloadable content because it's all online, but, you know, just, you know, little stuff that you have to pay for that you shouldn't have to pay for. Of course, you shouldn't have to pay for it at all because it's a Facebook game. But, yeah.
Yeah, and they run into big problems when it's like the equation is person who spends more money wins the game. That could definitely plummet the quality of that game in a hurry. So I do hope they don't go that route.
Yeah, I mean, it's Facebook. You pay for the game with your privacy. I mean, that's how it works.
Well spoken. Wow.
I think it's funny. So I see that a lot of people from the forums, or quite a few people from the forums, are considering joining Facebook for the first time. So they've been holding out for like 5 years. They're finally going to cave because of this. I mean, Facebook really owes, say, like a big, party with strippers or something.
Switching over from MySpace. You switch those over from MySpace too.
There's no MySpace games. Unless you count, like, game. I don't know.
Applications in MySpace.
Good to see that the game is going forward. I didn't see the name change coming. Civilization Network, Civilization World. It's a name. We're going to be following this, and I'm certain we're going to be hearing from people as much as, as they say, they can discuss how things are progressing. I haven't seen it actually, discussed yet. Like, when's the release date? When's the release date? I think that's only a matter of time. Since they're starting closed alpha testing, I mean, that's even before beta testing. Probably not this year, but I mean, who knows?
I hope that they're not going to go the Zynga route and start, going with some questionable business practices, I don't know. I feel like you sort of kind of get that from Facebook. It's not like, Facebook itself is a disease, but it's like a chimp or something that you can catch HIV from or something. I don't know.
What's the analogies today?
I don't know. I'm in an analogous mood, I guess. But I was just wondering, like, are there a lot of other AAA games that have had Facebook versions, or am I? Because I can't really think of any now that I think about it, and I don't really know any other Facebook games that are like, hey, we're gonna come out with a new version in like a year, so stick around, everybody. It's usually just like, hey, here's a new game, play it, everybody.
I can't say I've played a lot of Facebook games, honestly. Like, my mom got me to play Farmville once for her, and one or two other things, that's been the extent of my experience.
One or two other things. I don't pretend, Phil. I've seen you play Mafia Wars and ask me to join your game.
Yeah, right. I have like 8 or 9 pending requests for that, though. I've experienced being spammed.
Here's a health pack. Here's a health pack. Stop spamming me. Here's some super
You've been bitten by a zombie infection.
I think Civ World will take some of the good that is Facebook. I want to elaborate on that. I'm sure some people can fill that in for me. And the good of Civ. And, it's kind of like on the console platforms. Before Civilization Revolution, yes, there were strategy games, but there wasn't a strategy game to the depth that there was, that Civ brings. And I think that's going to be the same with Facebook. Not that I have hardly any idea beyond Farmville, and only anecdotally Farmville, as far as games that are on Facebook. But we know that Brian Reynolds, who was Civilizations 2 designer, he was at Big Huge Games. He left Big Huge Games to join Zynga. So that's the name, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones behind Farmville, is that right? Have that right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, they make Farmville and most of the top, six out of the 7 top Facebook games. I think.
You know what would make me happy if they did nothing else? They give you the ability to spam people through Civ World with the declaring war sound. Like, as soon as they open up Facebook, it says, like, so-and-so has declared war on you and plays the Civ 4 soundbite. That would just be perfect. Especially because then you could have, like, the entire team troll declare on somebody and just play the sound over and over again. So perfect.
I feel like looking at the top Facebook games, It really seems like, I mean, it's more oriented towards a more casual gameplay, and so I'm just wondering how it's going to be, because, you know, Civ has always been kind of a more serious and more complicated, and basically just a really long freaking game, especially Civ 5. I mean, it takes hours. So, I mean, there's complaints about multiplayer already, and I don't think people are going to sit on Facebook for hours. Just, I don't know.
No, Facebook, it's just like one of those, it's not like our PC-based Civ games or even console-based games where, you know, it's like hours and hours in front of a PC for a game or like an hour or so for a console game. And it is a Facebook game, it's like, you know, you do a little bit for a few minutes and then you leave and then you come back, you know, dozens of times in a day. So it's kind of, you know, rather than one big paper cut, it's just, you know, thousands of paper cuts. Now I've made an analogy to Civ 2 paper cuts, but anyway, you know. It's
next up is Chinese water torture or something. Just can't wait. Get squirrel AIDS. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll find some way to make it more like that. I have a feeling that Facebook games are kind of like that just for the advertising revenue.
Well, actually, that brings in an interesting question. How is this going to be funded? Like, there's been no indication that there's a price. Like with Farmville, for example, do you actually pay to play, or is it entirely ad supported?
It's the ad supported and stuff like that. But to do better in the game, there are things you can buy, so to speak, kind mm-hmm. of.
Okay. So
microtransaction type of thing.
Okay, because you see, to me. We talked about this on an episode of Polycast a couple of years ago, just about these kind of games in general, where the ability to buy things, it's not just extra shinies, it's not, you know, like icing on the cake, it's like you're able to buy more cake, like it actually improves your ability to progress and progress well during the game. If there was going to be like a paid version, I'll use an analogy of Polton, for example. Co-founder of Polton, I looked after that site as chief administrator, co-administrator for 13 years, and we had an optional subscription service called the Polton Plus, and it wasn't something that, you know, it's not like, ooh, now you can access new content, for instance, or ooh, you get access to this forum that nobody else does. It was just extra things, and the big thing being that we eliminated the advertising, for example. So I think there would be some people, if you really like the Facebook games, or you like Civ Network as a Facebook game, even if that's all you did on Facebook, was, I called it Civ Network, Civ World, still updating my terminology, even if it just got rid of the advertising for other games or whatever the advertising is, which can be a particular distraction, especially when we're talking about a user interface. You know, in Civ Rev and Civilization V, we don't have an ad taking up a portion of our screen.
Nope, just the unit selection menu.
But you paid for the game, so I mean that's
crazy. Yeah, that's why you don't have ads.
So Madgen said something interesting about how, you know, Civ World is not going to be for Civ gamers, which is probably a good point. For long, it'll be for those Farmville people who spend all their time on Facebook, which is a huge audience. Good point. It's about, you know, it's, you know, I mean, I think for Cityville or Farmville, no, Cityville, it says Cityville, it's like 70 to 80 million people a month, which is huge. I mean, it's by far, you know, like much larger audience than other games. And from that, you know, you get a huge ad revenue base. So I can see how this is this is a decent way to go.
They're going to have to balance that, though. They're going to have to. Because the only people who are going to recognize Civ World as an appealing product right from go are going to be the Civ gamers. Like, I can just imagine my mom or something seeing Civ World and be like, yeah, she's not going to touch that, but she's played Farmville before. So they're going to have some way to draw in casual players. Now, what I'm hoping is that they at least still have some strategic depth to the game. There's actually a game in there somewhere. Yeah, that's going to be the big divide in whether or not it's a good Facebook game or whether it's just another one of those spam-tastic things.
By the way, Phil, I heard that
it's just in
Madden.
Alpha, so we'll see.
Madden is coming out on Facebook.
I think Xbox is good enough for me for Madden.
EA has definitely proven to be really big on microtransactions, so we'll see about it.
Okay, I think we've said all we can say right now. On Civ World, you know, that's intelligent. And I guess that takes us to something called Civilization 5 directly. I guess it was released last year.
What does this speak of?
I don't know. There's some people that play it and some people that don't, and some people that did play it and don't play it anymore.
A lot of fun forum topics about how much you like the game. Oh, it's so fun.
I think it's safe to say that the patch that was released in December, and then the hot fix later on, so now we're up to, I think it's 1.0.1.141. Whew!
Oh, ho, ho.
Whoa, yes.
Interesting, like, notation system they have going there.
Yeah. Not so much the hot fix, but the patch itself really changed the approach to... some early strategies or even continuing strategies towards victory. And I think it's safe to say that most people like the changes that were brought by the patch. Argument about whether it goes far enough or in some cases too far. And there are still those people that say, well, this is better, but I'm still not interested in playing the game or playing the game at all. And the fact that we had this substantive patch a couple of months after the game was released, you know, whether, and to tie it back into whether John Schaefer is part of the team anymore or not, or whether anybody that was on Civ 5's development team is part of the game after release or not, that there are still individuals at Firaxis, in the private beta test, and in the community contributing discussions and suggestions, and not only, you know, making suggestions about how to improve the game, but why we want to change the game this way, that it is still definitely... you know, a game in progress. And, you know, of course, there's always the debate about whether or not this should have happened before, you know, the game was released. And there are pressures from Firaxis and from 2K and from individuals themselves to get something to market. And I'm enjoying Civ 5 more, even if I did have to knock myself down a lower difficulty level to start with. I find that post-patch, I'm not always doing the same things. Like, it was almost kind of a rinse and repeat almost every Civ game about what I was doing. Yeah, Honor Civic. Yeah, Horsemen. Where are they? Yeah, a rush. Yes, I conquered you, and now it's the next Civ, and it's the next Civ.
Use Horsemen all game. I ran a game on Immortal pre-patch where I used Horsemen even against, like, muskets and cannons, and I was having no trouble winning those wars with, like, almost no casualties. It was really bad. And this, you know, we can't read off the patch here. It's too long, but there's a couple things that they changed that I think are really highlighted. Yeah, the AI improvements, it's there, and it's getting better, but probably the biggest thing was the nerf to mounted and war to, in general. Cities were given an extra 5 hit points. A couple people on the forum noticed that. Really not too many, though. Like, they literally had 20 hit points before, now they have 25, whereas units have 10, for example. And they hit harder, and the horse units are weaker, and they have a city attack penalty. So the favorite warmonger strategy is completely out the window. The other big change was they reworked the social policies a little bit and changed the way happiness buildings work to discourage infinite city sprawl, although it's still probably the dominant tactic. Right now, high-level play almost entirely centers around settling luxury resources and selling them, so that you can buy a bunch of research agreements. There's really nothing that can keep up with the tech pace of just spamming research agreements. So it's still a little bit canned, and I do miss some of the depth from, you know, the previous game. But it's getting better, and I like that they're moving in the direction where there's a little bit of strategic balance between the victory conditions. Because really, every civilization, if you're playing optimally, it's all about war, war, war. And that goes back to Civ 1, that was true in Civ 4. If you play a multiplayer like game, and you're up against another human, somebody's going to win through warfare, or at least by significantly weakening the other person's position using warfare. And I would like to see it balanced to the point where it's possible to win others. And this patch is a step in the right direction for that.
Other than by, say, just, you know, disabling certain victory conditions.
Well, sure. But even if you disable a victory condition, like, what if somebody just conquers all your cities? Well, he's going to win space or time eventually. It doesn't matter if conquest is off, if you have no cities. You're not going to win. And that's why multiplayer is all warfare.
Yeah, well, I mean, speaking... Oh, by the way, on the topic of whether John had anything to do with the patch, I mean, I feel like he's hard... I don't know. It's he's hardly, like, twiddling his thumbs between the last patch and this one, right? I mean, he must have, I don't know, I feel like he must have done something or at least taken in some feedback from people. But I want to talk about how what they did to diplomacy with the whole declaration of friendship and denunciations. And I really did not like this denounce feature. Like, I feel like you get denounced for no reason, and then once you get denounced, you know, the other citizens will denounce you just as quickly. It's a domino effect. And as Madjin pointed out in the chat, they broke it by making denunciations permanent rather than temporary. That seems pretty terrible to me.
I'm reminded of a thread on CFC titled, "It's 1AD and everybody's denounced everybody." It's kind of funny, but they highlight how it happens. You know, you get a couple packs of friendship, and then one person denounces another person, and that person had friends, and the friends start denouncing that person that's denounced, but the person who was denounced had friends, they start denouncing, and all of a sudden, everybody hates everybody. And yeah, I do agree that's a problem. I think the Diplo side of AI, the patch making it transparent that you can actually see, you know, what's pissing somebody off versus not, is a good change. Some of these other things, and you know, what's triggering the AI to war, how it's, that needs a lot of work. For example, you can have a 20-city empire declare on you and defend against it for, like, 50 turns and then start taking cities, and you have, like, 6 cities, so you capture 3 or 4, and all of a sudden you're the bloodthirsty warmonger and everyone's dogpiling on you. Well, that's not really good design for the AI. All the other AIs except for the 20-city AI should still be going against the aggressive warmonger AI that has 20 cities if they're trying to win. And if they're sandboxing, even then they shouldn't be dogpiling you. Like, that's just kind of a broken design feature, very much like Vassal States from the previous game. The only other thing in the patch that I really hate that wasn't addressed is the user interface. And I have to get this out there, because it's really bothering me. I actually ran a couple tabs just on things that you would do in Civ 4 versus Civ 5, like, say, training a unit or looping a bunch of units in a city. And, you know, how many clicks it takes to do an action in one game versus the other. And I found that in many cases, you're looking at 2 to 5 times the amount of inputs to get something done in Civ 5 versus the previous game. Now, granted, you have one unit per tile and you have to work around that, but I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about other things, like clicking on a city and selecting things or adding to the queue or looping things or, you know, maybe waypoints. There's just so many things that, you know, or even just hotkeys in general. There's so many things that Civ 5 could be improved on in the user interface, and I would love to see some of them. So we'll see.
There definitely need to be more hotkeys, and I don't know, some of the ones that exist are a little bit weird, like, you know, like N for mine. That is really weird.
Well, I wanted to hit F for farm the other day, but then I remembered it's always been I for irrigation, so...
You know, why can't you have a system where you just map hotkeys? That's pretty basic now.
Yeah. Map out my own hotkeys. Okay, thanks.
Or just control clicking to queue. Like, the queue in Civ 5 is so convoluted. I really hate it. I miss being able to just click on a city and hold shift and click on a few things, and that's it. I don't need to look at that city again for, like, 30 turns. Whereas now, it's, you know, I have to baby it every time it produces something, or go through, like, a bunch of little tiny boxes after entering the city screen. But after you enter the city screen, you still have to press escape, or otherwise the box of units blocks your view of the queue. It needs work. It needs work.
On the you know, the denunciations being permanent rather than temporary, that Madjin pointed out, that I had a game recently, and I was like, okay, let's try single player Emperor level. I thought I was going to be going to for Catherine to the north, but she ended up becoming pretty powerful. I waited too long. I made the mistake of, I wanted to have this war take her out rather than just trying to cripple her. So by the time I had enough to be able to do that, I saw, you know, talking to my military advisor, who's the only advisor whose advice I found any use right now, and especially if, you know, if she's not the top and you check the demographics and you can't see where you are, it's just like, no, they're pretty powerful. I wouldn't piss them off. So I thought, I'm going to go towards my neighbor towards the south, who was quite weak, who happened to be Gandhi. Catherine contacts me, how would you like to declare to the world that we are friends? And I'm like, oh yes, I know this will improve my relations. I can see that transparency that Phil mentioned, that I can then hover over in diplomacy and say, oh, we've been declared as friends. So I thought, then she won't bother me. So I take a couple of cities, and then she says to me, because of how close our borders are, you know, it was inevitable that our friendship's going to have to come to an end. Like, okay, fine. And I like that step, okay? That should have been assigned to me that perhaps I should be splitting my troops, or maybe even forgetting about finishing off Gandhi, because I'd already taken a couple of cities. I should have stopped there in hindsight and moved back up, because I'm just like, okay, let's continue on with Gandhi. This is going well. You know, we're on our way to victory. And then Catherine's like, okay, I'm declaring war on you. And she was already at tech parity, and she had all her units there. And I'm thinking also about the one unit per tile and getting the units back. And I'm thinking, oh, man, I'm screwed. And I rage quit. But what I liked about... What I liked about that change was not only was it just... I mean, yes, there's things in diplomacy that still needs to be fixed. But what I liked was, in addition to the transparency, is after the friendship portion was made, and I didn't actually see any denunciations in that game. I've seen mostly declarations of friendship. That most of the time I said I would say no to those things, but I was so close to Catherine's borders, and I really wanted to go after Gandhi eventually. I thought that was a smart thing to do, to go to the weaker civ, to then to be able to, well, I can do better things with their land than Gandhi's doing, so then I could actually take on Catherine afterwards. When she said, it wasn't just instantly we're friends, and then there was war, there was actually that intermediary step where it was, you know, it's been removed, and it actually came up on screen. Like, it just wasn't one of those, well, yeah, I was stuck in the interface and, you know, in the top center of the screen, but I was doing other things and I didn't see it. It made it very prominent that this was a problem, and I should have taken that into consideration. So I do like that change.
Yeah, I think that most of the changes have been to the cities and the buildings. I do like one... Well, I don't know if I like it, actually, but there is one change that says, you know, only allow one upgrade per unit from a goodie hut, which just reminds me of the time when Bill had his Let's Play Civilization 5 Japan, and he got a pike, like, back in, I don't know, the, like, 3000 BC or something like that, and tried to take over I forgot what they were, you know, the small guy.
I think it was Siamese.
Yeah, the Siamese.
Yeah, that didn't go so well. If I'd had a rifle, though, which some people have had before the patch, then that would have been different. And that would have been the next upgrade, too, which is crazy.
I do like the changes that they made to the promotions. I don't like the fact that you have to take the promotion right away, but I guess that's fair. I do like the fact that, like, Lancers now upgrade to helicopter and... I don't see where it is, but... Oh, yeah, cavalry... No, wait. Okay, something else upgrades to something else, and I like it.
Things upgrade. This is a positive step.
Actually, those two sound similar. Like, if you compare storing social policies with storing promotions, they sound similar. But I actually like one change and hate the other. And my reasoning for that is when you're forced to take a combat promotion right when you produce the unit, that means you have to think about when you produce the unit how you're going to use it. And, you know, is this going to be a unit that's going to be fighting on rough terrain? Is it going to be a unit that fights in the flats? Is it going to be shooting cities? Is it going to be shooting other units? And where is it shooting the other units? Whatever. There's a lot of strategy there. Whereas before the patch, then you didn't really use strategy. You just left everything unpromoted until you got to where you were fighting, and then you took promotions as you needed them. Or you could just take instant healing and in-store promotions for that. So they were actually forcing people to take promotions, added a little bit of strategy to the game, just because you have to actually plan out how you're using your units before you use them. Whereas the storing of social policies, that one grates me a little bit because it takes away some options from the deep beelines. And they rearranged the tech tree to make the deep beelines into, say, the industrial era with biology a little bit more difficult now. You know, biology used to cost, like, what, 51% of the beakers or something that it cost to get the steam power? And I'm pretty sure they reworked that. So I never saw any evidence that going for later social policies, like deliberately avoiding earlier ones to get later ones, was actually the best option. I don't think anyone in any aspect of the game did any return on investment analysis for that or anything to show us that that's actually overpowered. Yeah, a lot of people did it, but a lot of people didn't as well. And if you're foregoing, like, extra food in your capital for 100 turns, or you're foregoing, you know, military bonuses for 100 turns, or, you know, discount settlers, or whatever it is you're giving up to get that order social policy, or, you know, maybe freedom, then, you know, you might not actually be getting a good deal out of that. And nobody proved otherwise. It was just haphazardly patched, and that I did not like.
Well, what is good is, and it's in the, as soon as you set up a game, it's along with all of the other options that you can save. You can say, hey, allow me to save not only promotions, but also social policy changes, or you can just check one or the other. I mean, you have to opt into that change, but at least we do have that option. So you can mix and match as you see fit. Obviously, in multiplayer, you have to come to an agreement or not in terms of what you want. So that way, you know, I like that. I never really thought that much about the promotion saving, but I do like that you can save. You can say, hey, save the social policy changes. And speaking of social policies themselves, you know, I mentioned earlier about, you know, oh, yes, I'm always going honor, 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 honor. That is definitely not the case anymore. And I know initially mentioned like last year about, you know, when you get to, you know, the classical age, it would be nice to have something to choose from, you know, other than piety, or if you store your social policy changes, then to save something else or go down, you know, tradition, liberty, or honor even more. But man, piety can be a really nice line if you are on the war path. And I think that was probably always the case, but now with what they did to honor and getting you to think about other paths as well, you're going on that conquering spree. Man, oh man, that theocracy one is really nice to go for.
I thought theocracy didn't give you happiness in conquered cities. Non-occupied cities.
Well, even then, I guess it depends on, you know, how many other cities that you have that were not taken. But it is a happiness boost. I thought it was for those that are conquered, but yeah, maybe it's not. But still, it's a great thing to be thinking about. That it's just nice that, you know, whatever your strategy happens to be, whatever victory condition you're going for, it's not, I feel like I need to take this. I need to take this particular path because this is the one for it. I mean, I know the game gives you, you know, suggestions like this path is for such and such empires, and it's not the absolute statement that it used to be, pre-patch.
Yeah, I was just taking a look at some other changes that happened to Build Aids. I think one that a lot of people complained about was that the fact that the library now has no specialist slots. I remember that they first had two, and then they reduced it to one, and now finally it's zero. I guess maybe because people are abusing the scientist, but I don't know. I don't like that change. To tell you the truth, I feel like there are. I mean, they did fix. They did do the change to fix the save format so that it. So that the game, you know, wouldn't crash as often, but I feel like it needs more help now. I mean, there's been reports that the hotfix made, you know, people's graphics card crash, and you know, I feel like, I mean, there's been numerous complaints about how the ending is really anticlimactic, and I wish they would have fixed these instead of some of the other problems that they had. Like, I mean, I never really had a huge problem with, you know, the AI making suicide attacks.
Yeah, I just want to go back, and thanks to Imagine for helping get my train of thought back on track. Yeah, I mean, when we're talking about, you know, with theocracy, you know, non-occupied, every other city, like puppets in your city, so...
So it does count for puppets. Yeah, that's good to point out.
The puppet thing is just crazy. I mean, so since it's non-occupied, maybe some of the happiness benefit that you can get out of that is just absolutely... insane. Oh, I was negative unhappy, and now I'm, you know, a dozen or more happy all of a sudden just in that single go. Maybe they... Oh, shit, I don't want to suggest a possible nerf to the warmongering necessarily, because I like that path, but maybe if you actually say that the city has to be occupied, in other words, you have to have a unit in there, perhaps, in order to get that benefit, then maybe it wouldn't be quite so uber.
I find a little comical, although it comes too late, that you can actually annex cities and get happiness instantly with police state if the cities are large enough, because the negative 50% anger applies to more than just the anger from being annexed. That was a little surprising to me. I was not expecting that result, but it comes a little bit late to actually make use of it, at least for early era starts.
There's another, the other thing that I did like is that they nerfed the effect of the maritime city-state a little bit, which I think most people agreed was overpowered. So the city-state now gives, the maritime city-state now gives two food in capital, zero food in other cities if you're friends, and if you're allies, you get three food in capital and plus one food in other cities, which is still pretty powerful, but, But it's still not as bad as before.
Yeah, depending upon, you know, what you're thinking of doing, you know, how food heavy, you know, your capital and your other cities are. If you're thinking about early on in the game, I've really found it to be of benefit if there's a cultured city-state nearby, and whatever the city-state is, at least be neutral or friendly. When it gets to that, you know, irrational or hostile, how much the decline there is in terms of your influence over the turn, I'm less inclined to be thinking about it. But man, getting the cultured one to certainly, if not friend, then to an allied state, especially earlier on in the game when you're getting absolute culture points as opposed to a percentage, man, oh man, can you ever start racking up those social policies? And that's not something I appreciated pre-patch, and it's not so much that, well, maybe the patch in and of itself did a lot to that other than, you know, what it did with the nerfing of the maritime city-states. But it got me to thinking more about, you know, again, not the same old rinse and repeat as far as, you know, okay, not only have I decided to go down the conquest line, and I'm still thinking that as far as the victory conditions goes, which gets back to what you were saying, Phil, earlier about, you know, kind of a better balance to the practicality of being able to go other victory conditions. But it is changing. It's time shifting when I'm going to be going to war. But it's also changing how I'm actually going to get to the war, changing what technologies I choose, what social policies I choose, and actually getting the city-states involved more in what it is that I'm doing. I mean, I've mentioned before that outside of cooperative multiplayer games where, you know, taking out all the proper AI, what can I do to, you know, increase my score? Because that's an awesome measure of how well you're doing. Always.
Wonders being so strong is really killing that format. So broken.
Rather than going after city-states and just taking them over, or...
Just spam Wonders. You know, outscore everybody, and then you quote-unquote win.
Yeah.
Take all the city-states, because they have all the population, and the population makes your score go astronomical.
Yeah.
Although I have used that in Civ 4, too, when we were playing co-op multiplayer. Just for reference, listeners, when we're playing that, after the end of the game, when we've killed all the AI off, we decide on the winner based on high score. So there was a game where, I admit this, because Dan and I were very close.
I know what
I had biology, and I farmed over all of my towns. I was running, like, universal suffrage, free speech, all that in Civ 4, like, total cottage setup. And after I killed my last AI, while Dan was still working on his, I just farmed over all my towns and grew my cities and won because of it. It was pretty bad.
Yeah, and in Civ 5, I and Dan were playing a few nights ago, and he was trying to finish off his AI, and I just sat there and started spamming Wonder, spamming more cities. I took over an island with a bunch of city states, and I had double his score almost.
Yeah, those Wonders are brutal.
Yeah, and I sacrificed early expansion to go after the AI that was on our shared continent.
That was.
And then, of course, there was the runaway AI on his own continent who happened to be Monty. So Mackie and I ended up splitting that Civ because it was just whatever, not small, tiny, right? It gives you four. So there was essentially one AI for each of us. But Monty was on his own island, so we ended up splitting his 8 cities. We each took 4, but I was taking them with riflemen, and Mackie was taking them with infantry. She was able to expand, and then she took over that entire landmass that was entirely the city-states.
I do find social policies in general a little weak in this game now, now that all the changes have been made. And Majin correctly pointed out in the chat a little while back that ICS was not nerfed to a sufficient degree to make it anything other than the optimal strategy even now. Even now, you still spam cities on the luxury resources and sell the luxury resources. But nothing keeps up with research agreements. Just nothing can do it, and nothing beats science. You know, you might have a couple extra social policies or not, but if you infantry and the other guy has, like, muskets, you're going to win. And that's pretty much how you do it, along with a couple of great person points along the way. So you get some great scientists involved your way, and then you use some research agreements, and all of a sudden you're out in front, and you can leverage that into just conquering everybody, pretty much. That's the canned way right now to beat single player. Although, that's kind of how it was in Civ 4 too, so I guess you can't complain too much. Because everyone just went for Renaissance in Civ 4 anyway.
And it just seemed, just as I was about to learn how that research agreement trick to influence what tech you were going to get, it looks like they went and they fixed that.
Yeah. No more putting one turn of research into what you don't want to get.
Yeah, that was a needed fix, very much so.
I love my research agreement where, you know, I was going down a particular path and I was leaving some earlier technologies. And so then after 25 turns and 167 gold, your research agreement is you've discovered archery. Oh! Rage quit. No, I actually didn't rage quit then. But
this is why you backfill with little things like that, because at the time,
yes.
You could probably have researched it in two turns at the time. Come
exactly.
On.
Yes, exactly. Or
two turns off of your beeline for rifles.
Is, yeah, backfill's all the more important now. Oh, sad face. So I guess that might be the, sorry, the end of the patch. and of course, Steam should be automatically updating you to the latest patch once you restart your Steam client. I mean, if you still had Steam going since, you know, November of last year, wherever you want to get that updated, it should auto-update unless you go in and you change that, which is a nice... It's a nice change. The auto update seems to work better than, I mean, with Civ 4, I always was downloading the patches manually, but for some people who are not as comfortable with that, that's a really nice change. And I'm certain we're going to see more patches in the future, too. There's lots of feedback, as we discussed here, about things that still need to be corrected. Gets to downloadable content for Civilization 5, and there's lots of individual discussions on the 2K forums and the various community forums about the different types of downloadable content, and we've talked before about issues with regards to mix and match, but at this point, if you wish to purchase all of the downloadable content, you're looking at just under $25 US, which is probably a little more than half, or about half of what you paid for the original game, quote-unquote original game. It was mentioned on episode 100, Barry Cottle, executive producer at Firaxis. He used the word expansion pack in the discussion, so it'll be interesting to see with regards to expansion packs if this is just going to, you know, bundle all this together. There are going to be other things, but even if that's the case, you can play with them now. These particular maps, these particular scenarios, and these additional civilizations, except multiplayer.
Well, since I can't swear anymore since we're live, it's freaking retarded. I mean, seriously. I mean, $25 for downloadable content? I mean, it's... I remember when they first announced downloadable content, we were kind of mad about it. And I don't know. This is just... I mean, come on. Am I really... I'm not going to spend $3 for maps. Maps? I mean, you can... I mean... I can't even
talk. I was looking through my Steam list the other day. It's like, oh, hey, look, there's this stuff for Civ 5. Why haven't you bought this? Because I'd rather have that money to spend in the Steam sale and get a bunch of other games.
Yeah. I hope that they put it on the expansion pack. And maybe, I mean, with all this downloadable content, maybe it's going to be, you know, more end up being more content than a regular expansion pack. But it still doesn't mean that I can't be pissed off about it.
I would rather pay you the $25 in like 6 months for the current DLC and the other DLC that you're probably going to release between now and then. It's better value for my money.
Well, I mean, what's the difference, right? I mean, if they release an expansion pack, we're going to have to download it through Steam anyway. I heard that it was the case when people bought Civ in a box, they still had to go on Steam to get it, which is just okay. I mean, it's nice decoration for dance shelves, but...
Well, no, they could still do it, because they did that with Fallout New Vegas. You could buy it as a box, and it installed off the CD. You just had to go onto Steam to authorize it, basically.
Yes, that was my experience.
Hey, how is DLC working with multiplayer right now? I mean, assuming multiplayer works, which we all know that it doesn't, but...
are you saying that like any one of us has bought one of these yet? Because I definitely haven't.
I haven't either. I think
that's
I got
true.
Something.
I haven't either.
Yeah, you can't use this downloadable content. Ooh, downloadable content is single player only right now.
I see. I have a big beef with multiplayer. This whole you can't give commands after you hit end turn completely shatters multiplayer.
Yes.
It makes any competitive multiplayer an absolute joke. Because what happens is nobody is going to end turn or move their units until other people have already done it. And if you're on a timer, then everyone's going to wait as long as possible until they give their orders, because otherwise they're going to get stuck in areas where, you know, the other person can attack them and they can't do anything about it. Or they'll be, you know, you're always at risk of double moves, even worse than it's ever been before because of this. And it's so painful. Not to mention that the turn timer is, like, you know, really, really annoyingly long. Like, the turn timer is a joke. Why even have it so long?
Seriously, I think it grows a second every turn or something weird like that. So by the time, I mean, so you're halfway through the game, the turn timer is like 2 or 3 minutes long. And it's like, that's really too long.
Yeah. Yeah, I even thought Blazing was a little long back in Civ 4, but I'm kind of on my own there. But I really like
yeah. But even so, even the moderate turn timer in Civ 4 was still faster than this turn timer.
Yeah. But you kind of need it, because otherwise nobody would ever end a turn. They would just wait for the other person to move so they could screw them over, because then they wouldn't be able to react.
No you first. No you. No you.
Pretty much. Pretty much.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm kind of hoping that, like, not a lot of people buy all this downloadable content. I mean, come on, you can't play MP with it anyway. Although, word from Madjin is that it's, you know, it's these Spain and Inca, which were in the pack, are decent civs, and there's decent scenarios. I don't know. I would just prefer that people not buy them so that, I don't know, that so that they know how, well, they thought how I feel about it. And just, you know, opt for mods instead. Although, I mean, it doesn't really seem like Civ 5 is really strong on that front yet. Although maybe the patch has improved that somewhat.
Yeah, I think if there's enough interest in, yes, we would like to play the Babylonian Civilization, but we don't want to pay extra for it. And I admit I have not looked at the mod browser other than since about the time the game itself was released. Just like even with an expansion pack for Civilization IV, a bit different circumstance, yes, but for some civilizations, oh, you don't want to get beyond the sword? Here's this mod version of whatever the civilization happens to be. And if that's not already the case with Civ 5, I think it will be. So there are other options available to you. Same with maps, too, and scenarios. I mean, I'm not a scenario person myself. Haven't been for a long time, but you know, the options there, you can mix and match, you can take some, you can take none. I think the Mongolian Civilization is still free, although it's interesting, when you go to the downloadable content page for Civ 5 on Steam, the free one is not listed there for some reason.
Gee, I wonder why.
Geez, Steam.
Weird.
I was gonna make an analogy to downloadable content to some illegal activities, but maybe I just won't. But you know, if you say, you know, like, you get this one for free, and then you want some more, then here's stuff that you actually have to pay for. You can read it between the lines for yourself.
I think that some people are might be holding back on the mods because they're releasing patches at such a rate that, you know, it might become incompatible just a month later. I'm wondering how these DLCs will, you know, kind of go along with the new patches. I'm not sure how that will work. I mean, especially because I know that previous saves are not, you know, compatible with the new patches, which makes sense. But it would be kind of crappy if you release patches that free patches that made your paid content, you know, unusable.
Yeah, this incremental patching is really good for the dev side because they can hotfix things and all that. But for the modders, this has to be a massive pain in the rear because they still really haven't stabilized. The game hasn't stabilized into one solid thing yet.
Yeah, sure, I feel like we're just like a, you know, like a, I don't know, a really big mass beta or something. Only we're paying for it.
I kind of said that all along, but
yeah. And I know the modders are still waiting for the developer's kit as well to be released, to allow them to get to some of the nooks and crannies of the code.
Yes. Of course, once that's visible, then we'll know a lot about how the certain things are functioning in the game, and there'll be fun abuses that all arise through normal gameplay as well. The barb spawn rule in Civ 4 was a good example of that. Oh, that was pretty groundbreaking for high-level anti-barbs. And I just have a feeling we'll find out some things like that from Civ 5 as well.
Well, even now in the DLLs, I've seen posts from people who've been digging around through it, and they can see certain parts of the code that have been disabled. That were disabled, it looks like that was going to be in the game, but then for one reason or another was disabled, but the code core for itself was left. Like, I remember shortly after Civ 5 came out, there were mentions of religion, for example, in the code that had been disabled. And so I think people are finding even more of that. And I think someone found something to do with, and I saw it posted in one of the threads about, I think it was John joining Stardock. I don't know if I made note of it or not, but something in the code about barbarians actually being spawned out of ruins or something like that. Like we saw in earlier Civ games. I don't know, but things like that, that perhaps may surface now, in addition to, you know, fixing the issues, which of course we've heard this before, we've discussed on the show about, you know, before adding new stuff in, which includes downloadable content and other things in patches that add things, then, you know, like, let's actually correct some of the issues that have been raised. And we're seeing a little bit of that, but of course, when a patch makes a change, then it often is that, oh, well, it made this change, and this was maybe a one step forward, two steps back in this respect, so now we need to patch the patch, and I think that's part of the reason why we got a hotfix pretty quickly after the first patch. Something about, I don't even remember anymore, some saves or something that you couldn't do something, like it was pretty critical for some particular portion, and yeah, that was, you know, it was quickly corrected, but
hey, if yeah. I was barbarian, I'd rather camp out in ruins.
I really expected Civ 5 to be a lot more modder friendly, given John Schaefer's origins in the modding community.
To mention how they advertised the game before it was released.
Really? What did they say?
It says the most moddable Civ yet. Right on the site.
God. Yeah, I mean, I didn't go into the process of how you actually mod. It is, but I think also that gets to, when we get back to, you know, the issues that are with regards to Civ 5, that, you know, just how much individual say and ultimate power an individual has over the process, because there have been a lot of cases, for instance, that even, you know, Firaxis or other people would rightly observe, well, that's not a John decision, it's not a Firaxis decision, that's a 2K decision, and that's particular people within 2K decision, so it's all very complicated.
Colonel Mustard asks, would you rather see more features or more fixes? Yeah, me too.
Yes.
I want a working UI before you add any more civs, please.
The one feature I do want is a better victory, you know, ending thing. I want a replay, but that's the only new feature I want. I want fixes. I want more hotkeys, and yeah, I don't want to have to click like 5 times just to add stuff to the queue. That's retarded. Not retarded. My apologies to the Special Olympics. Not cool.
Or special civing. What's it like? A couple thousand extra clicks? I think that's a little bit high, but I think it's reasonable that you have like 1,000 extra inputs per game. That's completely unnecessary. Probably multiple thousands in some cases if you're playing a longer map or a slower speed. Where that's just not good design. It's very painful, and you know it does kill immersion in other aspects of the game as well, because you know that's a hidden cost. If you're spending an extra hour playing, where you're actually not doing anything but fighting the interface, that hurts. That adds up quickly.
It'd be great if multiplayer had more ways to say that somebody won, other than just, well, we've killed off all the AI. Who's got the highest score?
Yeah.
There's plenty.
I mean, we could set the game to take the next number of turns, although we run the risk of not being able to kill the AI by then as well.
Yeah, I think there's plenty of stuff for the PvP MP players, but for us co-op MP players, we need a little help here.
Yeah, well, I guess we're not that big of a demographic, I guess. I would do competitive multiplayer, except for that it's so slow, and you know, wait forever for somebody, plus the whole double move problem right now, so that kind of put me off to it. The double move problem is where someone waits till right at the end of the turn to move all their units, and quickly at the start of the next turn, they do another set of moves. Now, that's been a problem since Civ 4, but with each tile, it's exacerbated. So, like, you could have somebody move into view, like, and then hit end turn, then instantly move and attack your city on the following turn.
Sorry, I think that's funny. That sounds like something you would do.
It's something that everybody does in competitive multiplayer. If you're not playing with people you know and trust and you have agreements in place, everyone will do it. You could have like a stack of horse archers in four, for example. So right before you end the turn, you declare war, you have your pre-built roads in the fog where they can't see you, and the second you declare, you enter their territory like a stack of 10 horse archers, which threaten two cities. And then you hit end turn. And then they have about 5 seconds before you're burning one or both of those cities to the ground. It's not a pretty environment, and it's even worse in Civ 5 because they can't even react until after you hit end turn. So bad.
Yeah, I gotta say, I haven't played multiplayer myself, but, you know, not necessarily because of that, but, well, actually, yes, because of that, but also just because it's kind of broken and not that much fun. it doesn't seem like there's actually that many other people playing multiplayer these days, because when I look in the room, there's only, like, a couple games up, and I remember in Civ 4, you know, there were a lot. There were, you know, at least 30 at the time.
I think a lot of people are making use of the Steam groups, is what it is.
Oh.
Yeah.
So the invites all go into a chat that's in that Steam group, and then they set it to private game, because they don't want everybody else piling in just because they see a game. Which, that's actually... Private game hosting thing is an improvement if we have to use a service, because I remember when you had to try something on GameSpy and it'd be like 20 people.
Yeah, like, you had to figure out how to forward your ports and whatever if you wanted to direct IP. And some people can't forward their ports, like if you are in a college dorm or something, or you otherwise don't have access or control of your router, then you're not forwarding ports, at least not without some rigmarole. So it is nice that anyone can host now effectively as well.
So we've come to really the end of the news portion here. What we're going to do is we're going to open it up to callers here. And I'm just going to play a quick sound clip here in a moment that if you've listened to a past episode of Polycast, you will recognize. Four of us will be a quote-unquote right back, as it were.
Calling news today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
You can Skype us at the Polycast or email us at thepolycast@gmail.com.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast and Revcast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
And I think, you know what, I think it's fair to say for those, maybe just a shout out to the people who are currently on the channel, such as we can see that we have 7 guests, but we also have Civ Colonel Mustard, Lord Mordane, Magin, SkewQ, and Wordka.
Wait, are you talking about me?
Nice.
Yeah, yes, as a matter of fact, I would, the most junior regular co-host, which may or may not be the reason why I'm picking on you. Oh, I wouldn't do that.
Well, that's exactly the reason you're picking on her. Come on, be honest.
Oh.
Really? I thought it was because she was the Emran replacement.
I thought I was the Emran replacement. Wait a minute.
Yeah, no.
Well, no, she joined the show after Emran left, you see. Kind of like on the Cardamando replacement. Although that's a scary thought in some sentences, but I'm doing what I can here. I don't sound very female, but other than that.
You sound good enough. So we're gonna go discuss the forum topic of what do Civ 5 composers still like in Civ 5, started by Bitula and Civ Fanatic. So a lot of people have been complaining about Civ 5, even to the point of, you know, not even playing it, or they'll just read the topics and think, oh, I'm not gonna buy this game. But there are still things that people like about it. And I feel like going through the responses here, the most common answer seems to be the hexes and the strategic resources and the natural wonders. So I don't know. I mean, I think most of us over here like Civ 5 so far. And I would agree with them. Some of my favorite features are the new combat system and the hexes, and the only thing I knew about multiplayer that I like is that they use Steam's system instead of their own. Or not their own, but their
GameSpy.
Yeah. And limiting strategic resources. I think that's good. So something a positive note for once. I mean, instead of just complaining about all the bugs.
I like the tactical element that they added to the game. And, yeah, it might need a little bit of balancing here or there, but as a design decision, I really like that Warfare has a lot more tactical value than it ever really has. You have ranged combat, you have Siege in a role that isn't so ridiculous like it has been in previous games, where it just completely dominated all the facets of military, which is nothing like real history. Also the rareness of getting totally hosed by the random number generator in combat. Like, you forget that when you're playing Civ 5, but, you know, I still remember axe rushing in Civ 4. Actually, I still play Civ 4 as well as Civ 5. But, yeah, you'll axe rush in Civ 4, and you'll attack, like, two archers with eight axes, and if they're on a hill, you might lose all eight axes if you're really unlucky. And you just don't see that in Civ 5. And the whole, you know, declaration of war being based on random number generator screwing, it might be there, but it might not, too. And if it is, it's not as apparent as it is in Civilization 4, where it's just like, oh, we rolled the war, now we have enough hand on our hands right now. So that aspect is really good, and the usability of the different terrain features. Like, you know, Russia has a bias to spawn in the tundra now, and in the past that would have just been totally awful, but you can work with the most terrains now. You know, this who starts where isn't as big of a deal as it is in the previous games, except for maybe for strategic resources, which is another change I really like a lot as well, that you actually have a limited number of units based on the amount of strategic resources you have, and you have to use them intelligently. Although I think the penalty for having more units than the number of strategic resources you have is really stupid. Other than that, though, that's a really good change as well that I like a lot.
And, you know, it's also a change that not having strategic resources isn't game over. Because I had a game where because I do random civs, and I got Persia, and I was able to take out the AI that was on my landmass with Immortals. I didn't have to have horses or iron. And when you get into the modern era, you've got things like infantry and muskets and rifles, so you have options that you didn't have before, whereas before, if you didn't have certain strategic resources, you were just completely, you know.
I wonder if that's true. In Civ 4 single player, you could certainly survive almost any difficulty level without strategic resources, you know, excepting maybe Shaka declares on you 1800 BC on Deity or something. But in multiplayer, you are screwed. But I haven't played enough competitive multiplayer in Civ 5 to really say. It might be very difficult to protect yourself without strategic resources. Are any of you guys familiar with how that balances in multiplayer if you spawn without, say, iron or something?
I can't say I am. I'm sorry.
Yeah, not in the PvP type.
I think it would be hard to get through archers. I think it would be hard to rush people in general in multiplayer, because you'd just get arrowed like crazy.
I think I was also a little bit lucky there. I happened to get the one civ that had a non-strategic resource unique unit.
Oh, no. Greece has one, and Aztecs have one.
Yeah, but
there's a couple other civs that are reasonable for that.
Yeah, another thing that I like is the fact that cities now grow one tile at a time instead of, you know, boom, you get like 9 new tiles, or, sorry, 12 new tiles, you know, suddenly. And, and I like the fact that they'll grow, you know, in their own way instead of just like in a concentric, you know, kind of circle-ish type thing.
Actually, option to buy tiles, too. A little bit of strategy to that for a change. It's nice. Yeah.
As far as having either no iron or horses go, just to tie back into a little earlier, that's when I'm going for hello, civil service and pikemen, before they're actually able to say, get, you know, long swordsman. I need to go. If I'm thinking about, you know, conquest, I'm thinking about actually trying to take somebody out.
Yeah, I also like the new promotion system. I don't like the fact that, you know, I mean, now you can't heal your units with promotions anymore. But, I mean, you do have to make the choice between it. You know, promoting your, not your civ, your unit, and, you know, giving it an instant heal. So, I don't know, I like that option. It's just much more strategic. But I guess that's part of the, you know, combat system category.
You can still heal units, you just can't store a bunch of promotions to chain heal in the middle of a battle. But if you get enough experience, like through fighting and then you're injured, you can insta-heal still. And the AI will annoy you with that from time to time.
Yeah, by the way, Madjin says the no-call is the worst, in terms of not having strategic resources.
I agree with that, actually. I mean, on the rare occasion that the game is still in doubt at that point, it really sucks not having the production a lot.
I don't know. I actually haven't really made it to that point. I know that people have made it to giant death robots and everything. And I would really like to get there. I really want to use one of those, but...
Oh, Lisa, just do an advanced start, and then you're...
Oh, did Dan just tell me to do an advanced start?
Wait a minute.
I can't believe what I heard. This is live, Dan. You can't edit that out.
I know that. I am giving what Lisa wants. She talks about wanting to play with a giant death robot, not able to otherwise get to the game at that point, so I'm offering a solution for her.
Achievement unlocked. I can have nukes.
Best achievement ever. No, actually, that's I'm on a boat. Yep.
Yeah. Yes, the naming of the achievements, that's golden. They did a very good job of that. I can give them that.
there's a thread on 2K that's kind of similar, you know, different side of the same issue, where he says, I think this game is awesome. Now go ahead and flame me.
Okay, let me get out my little flamethrower here.
There you go. Sound effects for free. Let's see here. He talks about, how that now that the game has better balance, it is outstanding. It's not Civ 4. I can understand why people aren't comfortable with that. Often people don't like to try something different. But in my own view, it's fundamentally better than Civ 4. I was like, whoa, okay.
Now he might get flamed.
Well, hello. Talks about, like, for instance, in all previous Civ games, science depended on gold and the slider. However, in Civ 5, they have attempted to make these variables interdependent, but also independent of each other, in a sense that science depends on population and not gold, and gold and happiness depend on resources. Your access to pop or gold or happiness is determined by the random distribution of resources on the two-dimensional randomly generated map. The effect this has, in my view, is to make the game fundamentally more strategic, quote unquote.
I also really like the new feature of city states. I feel like it could have been a little bit better, and because it just seems like you give them money and they give you stuff. I feel like it could have been a little bit more interesting, but I do like the idea. And
it's a good design concept. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like Civ 4 where you just have barbarians and they're all generic and they have. I remember that weird tech sharing system that the barbarians had. I think it was like whenever a barbarian Civ like gained the tech, all the barbarians would get it, and I don't know, it was weird. I like the city state better.
Yeah, you'd be dealing with warriors and horsemen type of things, and suddenly they'd have muskets. What?
Yeah, Civ 5, it's a little strange in that you have things that are more complex in it, like the actual warfare itself, and your culture expansion. And then you have things that are far less complex. The interrelation between commerce for the slider in Civ 4 versus your actual gold, beakers, culture, and espionage, that's as well as the great person points, is, I would say and argue, is significantly more, has significantly more depth to it than anything Civ 5 has on that aspect, because you have a lot more tile improvement options, you have a lot more considerations of when the tile improvement options you have become stronger. For example, workshops are totally worthless when you first get metal casting, but can become one of the best tile improvements in the game. And same thing with cottages and farms. They all have their trade-offs, and that's really not there in Civ 5 to the same extent. But you do have then, you have the plan where every single unit moves a lot more carefully, and it's just different. And there are some things I like in Civ 5 that I think are better than Civ 4. But I think for the most part, Civ 5's biggest problem is it hasn't been around as long, and it's just not a complete game. It wasn't released as a complete game, and even now it's very far from being finished in terms of, how it's coded, how you do things user interface-wise, how balanced certain things are. It has a long road there. I do think it could be a pretty good game, though, ultimately.
Yeah, everyone's comparing a Civ 4 that's had a few expansions and a lot of tweaking to Civ 5, which just came out and still needs some tooling, still has more content to add. It's not exactly a fair comparison.
I gotta say, though, Civ 4's conduct with the user interface does not have me having my hopes up now. I mean, who here has declared on somebody without prompt because the game, quote-unquote, thinks you're holding down Alt? I know Lisa's declared on me that way. I know I've declared on Dan that way. And I've had Hall of Fame games in Civ 4 ruined because I declared on an AI when I was just trying to trade with it. And that's
yeah, at least now it's kind of buried in there, and it's... There's a big flashing red button that says declare war. It's kind of hard to slip.
That
wasn't
the problem, though, because it was just like I would actually just click on Phil's game name on in a game.
Yeah, because...
Declare.
Declare.
I didn't mean to chat.
Yeah, because
oh, crap.
The interface was also the diplomacy interface. Now they're two separate things, so units, you don't do that.
Civ 4 also had the problem, like, you have a bunch of units loaded on transports or something, and you can control and click on your ground units, and it would continually select your transports, or, like, your air units or whatever. So many things like that would be frustrating. And it's just the fact that they left stuff like that in the Apostolic Palace unpatched while they tried to nerf, like, really, like, esoteric things like Wall Whip Overflow. That really grated me. And I really, really, really hope that whoever is in charge of that in Civ 4 is not who's in charge of that in Civ 5. So otherwise, I'll be very...
Straighten your priorities, man.
You did not need to introduce a bug in the Spread Culture Espionage mission or Overflow before you fixed the controls. It was not necessary. I'm sorry.
Yes, don't just patch things for what the Hall of Fame gamers are doing.
Sorry, in case anybody's wondering, we are forum talk.
Hey, and you've got to be faster on these musical cues.
Yeah, well, I know I got to work on that, but at least we're getting it in there. Get more practice here, and well, actually, I didn't even play the whole forum talk theme, which was bad, but at least. This is trying to get the cues in there. I'm like, oh, I knew I was forgetting something, but I know our audience will forgive us, and if they don't, then I don't care. what were we talking about?
Get out of my chat, he says.
Yeah, it's our first episode of this new season, so bear with us.
No, we're awesome. I refuse to admit anything else. I don't know what my co-hosts are talking about.
All right, don't bear with them. But anyway. I don't know if I actually like this or not, but I actually haven't done a single thing of city micro or tile micro since I've been playing Civ 5, and I feel like that's a lot less important now that the tiles are much less important, and it makes the game more accessible to people who are just playing because they don't understand this whole tile thing.
I wouldn't go that far, especially since a lot of your governor options will starve you. But yeah, the micro is still there for tile micro. I'm not quite sure on the trade-offs like I was in Civ 4, like when you'd work a farm versus switching over to a mine. I need to run the numbers. That's something I haven't bothered with. But I can just tell by playing it that the tile micro is definitely still there, especially when you're trying to halt growth in cities. Like, say you have a junker city that you placed for a luxury resource, and you built a coliseum there, and you really don't want that growing over 4 unless it's growing onto useful tiles. So you might actually tile swap to halt growth. And in doing that, there's your tile micro again. So it's still around. It definitely is.
But I thought coliseum's now got 5 happiness, so, wouldn't you want it to grow to 5 so that you could get the maximum amount of happiness from that city?
I'm pretty sure it's 4. Like, almost certain.
Yeah.
And now happiness buildings are capped at city size. Like, you can't have a city supplying more happiness than it actually is sized. So that's 4 is a pretty common place to stop for a lot of cities. Oh, good point there, Furious Fred. It's hard to micromanage with invisible rivers around your city, or invisible units blocking your tile improvements for that matter. But, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, I'm wrong. It was Stadium that now has 5 happiness, not Colosseum. Colosseum's got 4 happiness. Because I was just reading on a patch note, it's like, whoa, Colosseums are 5 happiness now? It never happened to me, but, yeah. I don't know. I feel like it's tiles are not as strong as in Civ 4, but I mean, I guess you still need to do tile micro, but I feel like it's not such a to such a point where, like, you know, it's impossible to get above prints or whatever if you don't tile micro.
Well, no, especially because the AI is not very good. So you can get away with a lot if you just take the luxury resources and keep a lot of research screens going. But yeah, it does seem like tiles were made... Well, you have less of those superpower tiles that you saw in Civ 4. So I they're still the primary source of what you're getting, though, because you need them to grow your cities, and you need them to build things, and things build really slowly.
Maybe then that takes us to... the research lab, which I linked the topic to in the chat a little earlier. See, I'm getting better on the prompts now that Mackie called me out. where this is the Let's Get Creative, the unique national wonders. And as for cloning Mackie in the chat, one Mackie is never enough.
It's because you stream is stupid.
The views expressed do not necessarily reflect... Okay.
I don't know, Mackie. None of us have Dash 1.
Jeez. Not that even anybody from Ustream is listening to this, but yes, this live broadcast has been brought to you in part by Ustream, where you stream you. Yeah, they didn't pay me for that. Anyway.
It's a good thing. I don't think they get their money worth.
Negative advertising. What?
I'm surprised they're not like, oh no, Dan Q's endorsing Ustream? We need to send him a bill.
All of a sudden our podcast just cuts off. It's gone.
Please deposit $100 for the next 5 minutes of broadcasting. Anyway, this thread, Let's Get Creative, Unique National Wonders, started by StevieG700, says, I've been mulling over some alternative leaders for existing civs. And I was looking at Nero for Rome, but then it occurred to me that about national wonders, a unique national wonder. What if every civ got one that actually fills a niche for distinguishing civs from each other that was once filled by governments and religion? Unlike a world wonder, a national wonder isn't locked into being anything physical. It could just easily be a philosophy or a social doctrine. So what he came up with for Rome was +3 happiness and an additional +1 happiness for each city. With an improved wheat resource, requires each city to have a granary. And then for Mao, gain 1 free social policy for one of the following: tradition, patronage, rationalism, autocracy, or order. Requires each city to have something or other. For example, a paper maker, and suggestions welcome. Well, I think civs are still reasonably distinguishable from each other as far as... yes, they're a unique unit and or unique building, but their particular traits, for better or worse, which we've talked about on the show before, which depending upon how you set up your games, like for instance, no barbarians, then, you know, like poor Germany. But I don't know, a unique national wonder. I mean, it gets back to there being a balance. I've said before that I would like to see each civ have a unique unit and a unique building, or just... Every civ has a unique unit, and every civ has a unique building. So if we're going to have a unique national wonder, as long as every civ can have one, and it's balanced where it's added flavor, and it doesn't give an arguably unfair advantage of one civ over another, you know, that's not Uber, or if it gives an advantage in this respect, and there's something that you're giving up for building that, or getting that unique national wonder. I mean, he says it doesn't have to be tied to something physical, but I'm still thinking about it being something physical.
Now, that's the snag, and that was one of the biggest eyebrow raisers when I first found out that civs are going to have these uniques, that, you know, unique ability as well as a unique unit and unique building like this is the balance. And it could be something as small as the patch, you know, taking away, well, that's not really small. The patch took away the 2 library slots, completely nerfed great person points early in the game, or at least nerfed your ability to get them. Well, all of a sudden, that Watt building for the Siamese is a lot better. It is a huge advantage over so many other civilizations because you have that, you know, extra scientist slot. And, you know, that they didn't even directly change Watt. They just changed the balance of other things, and that got stronger, you know, by relation. So when you're adding a national wonder like this, you have to be careful with balance. I mean, you could easily argue that the game is imbalanced as is. However, the concept itself of having unique national wonder, I have no issue with. I actually think that'd be kind of cool, as long as they were, you know, implemented tastefully and balanced. But that's a big if, because I would argue that the civs right now, there are vast differences between, you know, like the quality of one civilization versus another. Like, if you compare the Siamese to the Ottomans, it's night and day. So that can be a little frustrating.
Well, I don't know. I think it's a nice idea to discuss. I'm not really sure if it's absolutely necessary, but I mean, I do like the idea of having a nice national wonder, especially as another way to distinguish this. Although I think that Civ 5 has done a good job of it in terms of distinguishing Civs from other Civs. Like, playing one Civ, you know, just doesn't feel like playing another Civ. I don't know. Has anybody taken a look at some of these ideas? Like, I came up with a couple of my own, but I like, for example, you know, well, I kind of like the original one about the grain dole. What is it? Kira and Anone, three happiness and an additional one happiness for each city with an improved wheat resource. Although, I don't know, maybe I would like it better if it had something to do with food, but anyway.
There are some other suggestions that come up in the thread, like Face Plunger talks about unique national projects. So something that's even more temporary, like, for example, for a French Revolution, +2 science beaker for every civ for 5 turns, or the signing of the United States Declaration of Independence. All city-states not allied with another civilization are allied to America. For 10 turns requires the industrial era. So he's given it a name, what the benefit is, and what the requisite requirements are. And a lot of them seem to be sort of mid to later game possibilities. We don't really have, you know, projects so far as in, like, we had a couple, you know, in Civilization 4 that you couldn't rush them, like the internet, for example. But seeing as how we have wonders of the world and we have these natural wonders that by discovering them you get science, and then if you end up actually working them within a city you could get gold or more science or more production or, you know, combinations thereof. I like the idea of, you know, the unique national wonders. I still think it needs to be flushed out with some of the specifics, of course, and that's discussed in the thread, and the thread really isn't that old. It's only a week old as of this recording, but and there are some that are not particularly helpful, so I'm not going to mention those other than to acknowledge that there's some that are not helpful. But yeah, I think it's worth a go. Not necessarily right now. We've got other issues, and it gets back to what I said about, you know, some unique units and unique building considerations. As long as every civ ends up getting one, you know, there's the balance. We kind of talked about that already, and now I'm repeating myself, so I'll just be quiet for a little while. Happy place.
I don't mind the funny ones either, like the world's largest ball of twine or the
Super Bowl
victory.
That's so funny. By the way, one thing that I do like about, I said about a boot. Oh my god.
Hey? How's it going, eh?
One thing that I do like about Civ 5 is that for some national wonders, you have to build a building in every city, which makes it a little bit more special.
Although that can be just your capital for, say, National College.
I was about to mention that. Yeah, it's tied into what we've got kind of already with some.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I like the, I don't know, I like the Super Bowl victory too.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. I wouldn't mind that having that happen, you know, in my capital.
If I were, but there's no more random events anymore, huh? No, I forgot about that.
Don't get Phil started. Don't get Phil started.
It's like she just started a fire or something. Oh, man. I'd almost forgotten about them. You just can't let the curse leave me alone, can you?
What do you mean? It's gone. It's gone, baby.
Yeah. When he still plays Civ 4 occasionally.
Yeah, I disable them, though. They're broken garbage. I really should disable vassal states in Civ 4, too, because those are pretty terrible.
Oh, God, vassal states.
Just the idea that you can have a vassal, and if you were to world build or delete it, it would actually make somebody capitulate to you. Like, you're technically weaker, but they'll capitulate. That's just wrong. That never was finished. But we're SIP 5 here, SIP 5, mostly.
One idea that I did like was the Autobahn by UVA Strummer, or Uwe Strummer. For Germany, it uses 2 oil units gaining +1 movement in friendly territory and +10 to fury groups. I think it's kind of, I mean, at that point, you probably don't need to the +1 movement in friendly territory, but the +10 to 10% to trade routes can be quite substantial. So, yeah, that was a good one. And, yeah, actually, I like the other ideas that this poster had. Like the Alhambra, you know, Spain requires castle in 50% of all cities. Units gain 15% attack in friendly territory and +4 culture. That's kind of a lot, actually.
Now, when do castles come about, though? Because it's +4 culture earlier on in the game, of course, being that absolute value, that would be more significant than later on, potentially.
Yeah, that's like early in the game, that's half of Stonehenge.
I don't know. I've never built, you know, I never built castle. I never build walls, so I never get to that point.
I've built them, but I forget the exact tech they come from. Because I built everything in that One City Challenge game I had. I didn't even click One City Challenge, I just built One City anyway.
Yeah. That's kind of difficult, to tell you the truth, because it's like...
There we go. Our comments are always keeping up with us. Chivalry for Mad Jin.
Okay.
Oh, well, gee, that makes sense. Knights, castles, derp.
Yeah. Well, you know, it didn't come with that in, well, I guess it was guilds, which gave you knights in Civ 4. It came with engineering, which also makes sense from an engineering standpoint. So there you go. Just depends where they want to put it for balance reasons, I guess.
I don't know. I just never ended up building castles.
Walls and castles are pretty good now because they don't cost maintenance. So, you know, if you have somebody who's likely to attack you, throw them up. They're pretty hard to get through, even for the AI. Yeah.
Okay, castles and chivalry. Okay, so +4 culture. No, okay, that's not.
Yeah, that's not.
That's not outrageous then. Okay.
Yeah, that's far enough along the tech tree that you're not going, what?
There's stuff in there. I was looking, I'm like, that's kind of underpowered. Like, I'm not sure I'd want to blow 500 hammers for a 10-turn minor advantage.
Oh, the...
It's just a question of balance.
I like the flavor of it. I'm not sure about that actual implementation, though.
Well, there's no way. Like, you could just think of something as an idea like that and have it be perfectly balanced right away. You know, I couldn't do that. I don't think anyone could do that. But yeah, it is worth pointing out that some of them are a little on the weak or strong side.
I feel like most of these ideas are, I guess not really physical things, like the French Revolution and the Indian Independence Movement and the Declaration of Independence. These are mostly like more like national projects than anything. I don't remember if projects can be heard in Civ 5, but... I don't know. I think they should be able to be hurried here because I mean it's already a unique national wonder. So what are you? I mean, what's the point? Are you gonna beat somebody to it? Like, oh, it does make me wonder though. What happens if you capture it? Well, I assume that you would still have the building, but maybe not.
Yeah, national wonders are usually okay. I don't know how it works in Civ 5 at all with national wonders, but I'm pretty sure you don't get to keep them. Or maybe it's like Civ 4, if you don't have it already, you keep it or something. I don't think so, though.
Yeah, I don't remember how that works. I mean, I think I've heard of it. Magic points out that Himeji Castle comes at the same time as Castles, Chivalry, at the tech Chivalry, and it has a +4 culture addition. So it seems pretty much the same as the Alhambra, to tell you the truth, or the suggested Alhambra.
That thing can be pretty fun if you combine it with Oligarchy. There's like no moving into somebody who has both of those. It's just obscene. Kind of disadvantage you are on their territory.
You seem to have played a lot of games. How many hours would you estimate that you played in Civ? I don't know if Steam logged them or not, but
it does.
Steam does. Actually, I'm actually ahead of me, I think.
I was looking at this the other day before Dan, I think, ever suggested it as a topic, and I looked at this and realized that Civ 5 now beats out everything else. I mean, the next closest thing I've got is the original Mass Effect, which is 188 hours. but I've got 211 hours in Civ 5.
Yeah, are you kidding me? I have 102 hours in Civ 5. Now, that's partially distorted, though, because I have a lot of forum time, and that makes a big difference. You know, 15,000 some forum posts between Civ 4 and Civ 5. Most of those are Civ 4. But,
oh,
yeah.
I don't have my Civ 4 hours in here. That's probably a good thing, though.
It makes a big difference when it comes to improving at a game, though, when you're on the strategy forums all the time, seeing what other people have to say.
Yeah, I mean, I think all of you have me beat by far. I have 69 hours.
Oh, you'll catch up fast enough. Don't worry. Oh, it's, Dan has 184 hours in Civ.
Well, yes, enough. Yes. So I think all of us fall under the poll results here for this thread that we're kind of getting to, started by Bam Bam. We really like Civ 5 and play it every chance we get. And I guess once we get up to 251 hours, we want to have Sid Meier's baby.
What?
that would certainly make a news story for you and me, Dan. It did the last time.
Yep, and Imagine says he's got 391. I get
okay.
There you go.
Wow, and, I feel like an amateur now.
And if you get up to 500 plus, Bam Bam
says hi, Imagine. Sid says hi.
And if you get up to more than 500, Bam Bam says you're going to be on an upcoming episode of A&E's hit series Intervention. I find it interesting you have to get to 500 plus in order to actually get on that show, but okay, that's fine.
So you have to set yourself apart from all the other people who are, you know, need an intervention in Civ. You have to be special.
I really like these poll options. It's really cute.
And it sounds like a lot of hours, but when you figure how many days the game's been out, that's really only like 2 or 3 hours a day or something like that.
Yeah.
It still sounds like a lot of time to me.
Yeah, it does, but eh.
Relatively speaking. Don't make me actually go calculate that. I was just doing it off the top.
I actually have less than an hour of day logged in it, interestingly. But I play a lot of other games, too, so.
I was going to say, you're like master of strategy, so yeah.
I've been playing Sims 3. Sorry, I just had to get it out there.
I'm sorry, we seem to have lost Lisa from the call. Try to get her back.
I've gotten Minecraft lately. Minecraft is awesome.
Good thing I don't have my hours in Minecraft logged.
I'm going to build a monster trap. Whoops.
I think for a lot of us, if we were to include like our Civ 4 hours, we're probably at quadruple digits.
yeah.
Especially
yeah.
with our weekly multiplayer games.
I have no doubt.
I like, actually, most people in this poll are under the 101 to 250 to the 76 people that voted. I think my favorite one, I mean, yeah, Sid Meier's Baby and Intervention, 2 to 10. My wife revoked my computer privileges after I bought her that vacuum for Christmas. You're lucky that's all she revoked, that's what I'm saying. So anyway.
Grab an apron, a vacuum, an iron, and a couple plates. Put the sandwiches down. Good job.
Poor Maggie.
Apparently Lisa's fine with it, though.
I really like this reply by Mega Bears Fan. It says, according to Steam, I'm a 277. Not because I want half Sid's baby, because I'm a Civ junkie since 2003 and just can't get enough, even if I am very disappointed in the new product. Bad crack is still crack.
Definitely want Sid's baby, there's no doubt.
Yeah, he doesn't want to have Sid's baby. He needs to. Oh, okay, never mind.
It's okay. I mean, until you get a bunch of, you know, little, I don't know, hormone prescriptions, I really doubt that it will happen.
Is anybody not thinking about that movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger where he.
Oh, yeah, where he has a baby. Okay, was it him or was it
Danny? And Danny DeVito was in it too? Oh,
geez. Both of them in it. Junior was the thing where he was. Why do I know this crap? Because it was the 80s and they made hilariously stupid movies.
To go with most things, 80s.
Pretty much. Geometric pattern shirts, anyone?
I was too young, it's okay.
Did you hear anyone?
I'm not kidding, I was born in the 80s.
Well, I was too, but early 80s.
So is Dan.
Yeah, early 80s, yeah, that's true.
Just give me my walker and my cane, alright, fine.
Get off my lawn!
No, it'll be her Elon.
My Elon.
Facebook game has lawn. You better not trounce that.
Yeah, back in my day, we didn't have your fancy Facebook. We had GeoCities, and they were awesome.
Oh, wait. Well, that'd be back in your days, Dan. When I was a kid, we didn't have computers in every household. You had to amuse yourself with sticks and stones and books and things.
And they broke your bones, but the names never hurt you. You walked right into that one. Come on now.
I walked right into it. You threw that door in my face. What are you talking about?
You could see the door closing as you were getting closer to it.
Yes, I made Dan made a horrible bad analogy. I went.
Yeah, so you're actually encouraging me, Mackie. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Now all of you have a little singing segment.
Oh. Oh, Phil mentioned the S word.
Troll.
Troll, no.
Give me an S. Give me an I. Give me an N. Give me a G. Yay.
Fists of the internet in Dan's face.
Aw.
the things I want to say but can't because we're liars.
Just save it for later. You can tell us.
Why we went to a live format, and just going to briefly go over that. One of them was simply time for myself in real life, just to be honest, in terms of editing. Also wanted to get a speedier turnaround last year. It just also tied into the real life. It was taking, I admit, 4 to 6 weeks on average in the second half of the year to get an episode out, which hurt not only some of the stuff that was said, but some of the stuff that was recorded. I just ended up cutting it entirely because it was so dated, particularly after, of course, Civ 5 was released. The greater audience interactivity, we really liked that. From episode 100, some things accepted by some people, of course, in the chat. But people have been behaving themselves today, I think is fair to say. So we do appreciate that. And although we had no set guests on this episode, we just wanted to have the four panelists just because trying to get used to the live format and get some of the, you know, the things settled, the dust settled, etc. But we will be having guests on again in the future, and hopefully people will be able to or want to be able to call in and be able to call in. I know I've spoken to a couple of people, and they just said, sorry, can't call in right now. But we do appreciate the contributions in the chat, and I think it's fair to give a shout-out again to Imagine in particular for all that he has done in this respect. But we have come time for that thing, which is the closing. And when you listen to an episode before now, how do you know that the closing was coming? Well, you'd hear this music.
Yeah, notice Dan's not on top of it until I call him on it.
So I believe a certain someone like to do the closing to the show, and by... you know, by wanting to do the closing means she was kind of half voluntold. Anyway.
So, this has been Polycast, episode 109, and our first episode of the fifth season. We have been joined today by our four co-hosts. First, Dan Quick.
Sivan.
Makalua.
You still require more caffeine, yes.
The me and T.
Just like Genghis Khan, they took out my fluffy bunny activities in the patch.
And me, QNL. Have a nice one.
Thanks to everyone again for listening to the show in whole or in part. And again, we'll be back in a couple of weeks.
Hi, I'm Ragnar. I am the immortal leader of the Viking Nation. It's not what's on the outside that matters. It's what's on the inside that counts for me. I'm looking for a woman who's willing to open her borders to me. I'd like to enter into a defensive pact, and maybe if things go well, settle down in a permanent alliance. I wouldn't mind popping out a few settlers of my own one day. My idea of a perfect date is to take my trireme out for a moonlit cruise along the coast, have a nice romantic dinner with a seafood buffet where we'd feast on my plus one food from my trading post. And if things go well, I'll have you screaming just one more turn all night long. I'm an old-fashioned kind of Viking who's up for a down-and-dirty domination victory any time of the day. So if you're looking for a big berserker who's a teddy bear at heart, drop me a line.
Do you remember that time that you went dressed as, you know, Julius Caesar to that date?
No.
Very inappropriate.
I don't even know who...
It was the Ritz. You can't dress in a toga to the Ritz.
It was a toga party, so it's allowed...
Nobody else had it.
Everybody else forgot their toga. I was the only one dressed appropriately.
When I first met Brian, his attributes were creative and charismatic, but the deeper he falls into his addiction, he becomes aggressive and protective. He just won't let me in anymore. I know he can do it. He's strong. He's much stronger than this game. Oh, Brian! Hi!
Hello, my sweet. We returned victorious from our grocery store. You will notice the grapes and the ambrosia that you've asked for.
I didn't ask for ambrosia.
So, what brings you all to me?
We have all been talking, and we think that you might have a problem. So, we'd like for you to agree to enroll in the Sivanon program, which is weekly meetings and a retreat in the woods for 6 weeks.
Not the woods that we've leveled to make more production shields, to create the Hanging Gardens of Babylon.
No, these are in New Jersey.
Hello, I'm Next Civilization Addict. I'm hoping that my testimony might help you in your struggles to overcome this affliction. It wasn't an easy path. It carried the same thrill as bombarding an enemy's capital with artillery while they had nothing but crossbowmen and pikemen to defend it. But I was finally able to find one thing that did carry that same je ne sais quoi, and that would be real-world domination. Yes. I've now been free of civilization for 5 months, and I'm about to complete my coup of Russia. So, if you find yourself in the same boat, unable to find anything else that will sate your hunger for conquest, then might I suggest attempting real world conquest.
3 turns until steel, and then I'll get some sleep. Well, I've got the steel. I may as well build some cannons, and then I'll get some sleep. I've got the cannons now. I may as well take that city on the border, and then I'll get some sleep after that. I've taken that city. I may as well get its capital, and then I'll get some sleep. Then I'll get some sleep.
It's hard getting around. It takes more than one turn, so you gotta stop and start your next turn, and, you know, you can never get to one place in one turn.
Even getting to the refrigerator can take more than one turn. Some people stop and stare and wonder, why do you wear that controller around your neck? And they just don't know it's to start my next turn, to keep on going. I've been late for numerous occasions, and sometimes you get so close and you think you can make it, but then, you've realized, I just gotta take another turn.
I go twice as far on roads, though. Thank God there's a version for the console, because I don't have to lug around a full-size keyboard anymore.
Hey, dude.
Hey, what's up with the camera?
Dude, I was planning to shoot this Sivanon video that we spoke about your gaming addiction. Do you have 2 minutes to shoot it right now?
Do we have to do this right now, like in the middle of the turn here? I'm about to crash Napoleon with my Praetorian army. Check this out.
Dude, you're always in the middle of a turn. The deadline is tomorrow. We have to do it today.
Just give me one more turn. I also need to deal with the copper embargo that Gandhi imposed on me.
One more turn. Stop, no more turns, dude. If you can win this prize, you can finally pay my 2 months rent that you owe me. Let's shoot this today.
Look who wants peace. How about your head would look good on the end of a pole?
Have you even been listening to me?
Hey, don't touch this, okay? Oh man, look what you made me do. I sent my army to the wrong tile.
Dude, I'm sick of you and your video games.
Find yourself a new apartment and make yourself a biggest loser of the world, Wonder.
So you wanna shoot this? Hey, you wanna play multiplayer?
Screw you!
Record date, January 8th, 2011. Civilization 4 and Civilization 5 sound clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Sivanon 2010 contest entries clips, courtesy Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.